fantasy genre is vast, complex, and has existed for time immemorial. It is a way to escape the drudgery of everyday life, but also a method humanity uses to examine itself in interesting, boundary-shattering ways. We are fascinated with the heights of glory we can rise to, with the depths of depravity in which we sometimes fall. Fantasy gives us an opportunity to reflect on these themes, and let's face it, it's also just plain old fun. Join us weekly on Fridays for the Fantasy in General podcast, where we discuss all things fantasy in general. Thank you so much and enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Fantasy in General.
Welcome on back to the Fig Pod.
Yep.
Kelsey decided to, I don't know if it's going to make the episode or not, but Kelsey decided to just hit record while I was in the middle of a conversation with her. And I was like, oh, okay, here we go.
So we might hear that at the beginning. I don't know.
It's possible.
To be determined.
TBD.
What's up with you?
Let's see here. Well, not a ton. So we're going to a wedding next week. You and I both are.
True.
And preparing for that. And work has been good this week for the most part. Going floating down a river tomorrow.
Okay.
So I'm excited about that. It's very relaxing and enjoyable going into nature. Other than what?
Just going into nature, straight in.
Just going straight in.
Feet first.
Yeah. Well, depends on which way the river turns you. Could be feet first, could be head first.
True.
You never know.
Fair enough.
But other than that, not a whole lot, I don't think. What about you? Anything new or different going on?
Not a whole lot new. Have you watched Ahsoka?
No, I haven't. Have you?
Yeah.
Is it good?
I like it.
Okay, so I have a lot to catch up on. I've been terrible. I have a lot to catch up on as far as the Star Wars universe goes.
Yeah.
So I've heard Ahsoka basically kind of picks up, or at least this is what the trailer made it seem like.
Okay.
That it picks up where the animated series, The Clone Wars, ended.
Yes.
Okay.
Pretty sure.
Because The Clone Wars, the animated series, is pretty darn good.
Wait,
it's actually really good.
No. Ahsoka's okay. Like between trilogies.
Return of the Jedi and blah, blah, blah. What's the new one called?
No. Revenge of the Sith and...
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, Revenge of the Sith and...
If I'm not Force mistaken, Awakens. Ahsoka and Andor are pretty close in time together.
Okay, so between Return of the Jedi and the Force Awakens.
No. Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah. I'm spacing. So, okay. Sequentially speaking, Return of the Jedi.
No, wait. Hold on. What?
Because Ahsoka shows up in...
Yes, I'm sorry. No. Yeah. 20 years before The Force Awakens. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
Because Ahsoka shows up in The Mandalorian.
Yes. Yes. Sorry.
Which is after Return of the Jedi, before The Force Awakens. Okay.
Yes. Mandalorian, not Andor. Andor's before that. Yes.
Yeah. Andor's before A New Hope.
Yeah. Okay. There we go. There's so many new ones, you know?
Yeah. There are a lot of new ones.
But Ahsoka's really good so far.
Okay. Are there some cool Jedi scenes?
Yeah, I mean, she's pretty legit.
Yeah, I mean, Ahsoka's cool.
Yeah, she's cool.
She's Anakin's Padawan.
We have some little hintsy hints of, well, I mean, I don't want to like spoil anything, but it's like comes up in the first episode. But Thrawn is a thing.
Do you see him?
Not yet.
Oh. Thrawn's cool.
I know. I think that's the... I mean, Ahsoka's awesome. Don't get me wrong. But, I mean, you know. Let's...
Oh, Thrawn is a cool character, for yeah. sure.
Yeah. So, we'll see. Fingers crossed on that one.
Yeah, I've heard that they're wanting to do a Thrawn series, so maybe this is how they're going to launch it.
I mean, that seems to be the trend. You take some, you know, side player and make a whole series about it, right?
Yeah, but this is the thing with Thrawn is he's got some major best-selling books.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true.
Which I know your husband has started to read. Have you read any Thrawn books?
No, mm-mm. Not yet.
Oh, they're so good.
No, but he likes it a lot. Yeah. Have you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah, Thrawn is basically kind of like Napoleon meets Sherlock Holmes.
Okay.
And he kind of in each book has his sort of John Watson foil. It's a sidekick.
Okay.
But Thrawn is just, you know, kind of one step ahead of everybody. At least yeah. one step ahead of everybody. He's just brilliant.
Yeah, that's what my husband always talks about. Like, he does things on purpose. Like, it's
character. Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, things like that.
Yeah, even when it seems like Thrawn fails, it's just a piece of the larger puzzle that leads to his victory.
Like, if you think that you have Thrawn, you are already dead.
Yes. Like, so, yeah, for
actually,
sure.
Actually, you don't want that to happen, so just give up.
He's, what's his title? Is he Grand Admiral?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Grand Admiral Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Yeah.
So he's below Grand Marf Tarkin, I think, in terms of rank, but man, I'm trying to remember. I'll have to think about it, but he eventually gets way high up there in the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all strategic. It's pretty impressive.
Maybe I need to read it.
Not one maybe. You absolutely have to.
I know. One thing at a time.
What are you reading right now?
Dune.
Well, okay. That's what occupies all your time? Well, you have a job.
Yes.
And children. So, okay, fair.
Do you want to know what else I'm reading? I'm pretty sure it's called The Fundamentals of Qualifying Students of with Specific Learning Disability Under the Response to Intervention Model.
Is that just for your own edification because you've graduated?
It's for work. We have to read it.
It's required for work?
Yes.
Oh, man. Okay.
I actually, to be fair, I've read the title page so far. So, yeah.
I mean, you just spent like, what, 3 years in school learning about all this.
Reading,
so.
Yeah, reading all of that. So, here we are. What else? Well, this kind of has to do with our chapter by chapter, but
uh-huh. You'll
be very pleased that I was sitting there reading and I was just like, man, you know, it's tough to just sit here and read, downloaded Audible, got stuff done, and I love it. So
yes,
it's, you know what? And I find with this book in particular, sometimes it's so hard to follow the characters, like who's talking and things, at least for me right now, that when there's right. different voices, it's very helpful to me.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
Totally agreed.
Yeah. So I like it.
Yeah. So like we'll talk about the leader of the Harkonnens, like in the audiobook, has a different voice than the narrator, who has a different voice than Paul.
Yeah.
Who has a different voice than the Reverend Mother and stuff. Yeah. It does make it a little bit easier to follow along because these first several chapters are loaded.
Yes.
With information where you're like.
I think that's what it was, you know, you have to really, really pay attention. And then you go back and you're like, wait, who said that? Because I'm trying to digest all of this, but like, who's speaking? So makes it a lot easier.
Yes. 100%.
Yeah. But it's.
Totally agree.
Yeah.
I love audiobooks.
I thought you'd be pleased by that.
I am pleased and proud.
And it will help me with my pronunciations.
Oh, it's helped me with mine, for sure. I mean, I'm assuming since it's the Audible book, it's pretty official with the pronunciations.
I think so. And if it's not, don't come at us because I don't know, okay? If they wanted it pronounced, if you wanted it pronounced right, make some easier names, you know?
Yeah, if you pronounce Arrakis something like Arrakis, Arrakis, or something like that.
Just no thanks.
Yeah. Talk to us about something else.
Exactly. Exactly.
Email us about Billy Boyd and who's married? Dominic Monaghan. Email us about them.
Yes. Yeah, there you go.
And we'll talk about Lord of the Rings and the actors in them and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
Oh, you know what? So I know that one last thing from me. I know that I have talked to you about the podcast Smartless. Okay. Yes. I know I talked about it last time. And this is definitely not for Figlets. Okay. But
their yes.
latest episode, probably not now, but I listened to the recent one with Kevin Hart.
Oh my goodness. That okay.
Was incredible. If you want a good laugh, that guy does not have a good mouth. So don't.
No.
Yeah. It's explicit, but it was.
Yeah. Kevin Hart does have a very, like you just said, explicit way of speaking, but that man is very quick-witted and very clever.
Yes.
And pretty hilarious. Yeah.
Yeah. That gave me a good chuckle this weekend. So,
does he talk about The Rock at all in the episode?
Yeah, I think he did. What did he
say? Dwayne Johnson or whatever. Yeah. Because they've been in several movies together and it seems like they're pretty good friends and they tease each other all the time.
Yeah. He teased Sean for most of it.
It sounds like Sean gets the short end of this thing.
Yeah. Sean gets a. Picked on quite a bit. So, but no, it was fun.
So, I'm sorry, what's the name of the podcast again?
Smartless.
Smartless. So,
I'm telling you got to listen to it.
I do. So, we mentioned all their names last week, but Jason Bateman, Will Arnett, Sean Hayes are the hosts.
Yeah.
And those are three very funny people.
Yes.
Jason, I love Jason Bateman. I love Will Arnett. Sean Hayes is pretty darn funny.
He seems like just a genuine guy, you know? Just a sweet.
He does. Honestly, I don't know him from anything else other than Will and Grace. Is he in anything else?
I don't know. I think he does like Broadway and stuff.
Okay. Oh, you know what? I think we may have talked about this before, about my love for the show Scrubs.
Yeah.
Sean Hayes is in a season of Scrubs. Well, I should say this. Not a season. I think he's in one episode, but he does a great job. It's really funny. And also really, really genuine. Like you said, he seems like a really genuine human.
Yeah, Nick Murdoch.
Okay. Yes.
All right.
So, yeah.
Scrubs. Maybe someday. I know.
It's upsetting, Kelsey.
I know. I'm aware. It's okay.
Kelsey AFC Severson. You need to get on board with this.
So the first episode that I listened to of Smartless was with Ewan McGregor. So.
Oh, wow.
That was a treat.
You know, apparently there is a podcast with, what's his name? Barty Crouch Jr. from Goblet of Fire. David Tennant.
Okay.
David Tennant and, they're in a show together called Good Omens.
Okay.
On, I think it's on Max, because it's called Max now instead of HBO Max.
Yeah.
It's David Tennant and, I'm going to Google it real fast. And it seems pretty funny.
Really?
Definitely for figgies, not figlets.
Okay.
Good Omens, comedy series starring, yes, David Tennant and Michael Sheen.
Okay. I've seen, yeah.
And yeah, they have a podcast where basically it seems like they kind of yell at each other and make fun of each other, but they interview guests as well and also yell at them, and the guests yell back. And Ewan McGregor's on one of those episodes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And at one point they're like arguing over who has had the more successful career. And David Tennant's like, well, you know, Harry Potter made billions of dollars. And Michael Sheen goes, you were in like one movie. And you were in one scene. And then David Tennant goes, well, and a flashback. But I don't know. It's just kind of funny. They just tease each other and make fun of each other. And Ewan McGregor's on one of the episodes. And it seems like it's pretty. Because Ewan McGregor yells back at them.
Oh, okay.
And it seems like it's kind of funny. So I don't know what the podcast is called. But David Tennant, Michael Sheen.
Okay.
Might be worth a check out for figgies, not figgies.
Okay. All right. Will do. All right. Well, now that we've, given so many not family friendly recommendations to our family friendly podcast. Sorry about that.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't said anything that's not family friendly.
Ahsoka is family friendly. That's
okay.
That's fine.
Most Star Wars stuff is. So.
Yeah.
Good on Star Wars.
Yeah, we're good there. Good there. All right. Well, let's take a quick break before we get into the
meat
of our episode. All right. And welcome back.
Welcome back.
What are you laughing at?
I'll tell you later.
Okay.
Text messages that I've received.
Well, as we were going on to our break, we both received a text message. And I'll put you on the spot for this. Your wife texted both of us a picture of a Facebook post. And you are a police officer. Okay.
Correct.
And it's a picture of you and another police officer in front of some flowers.
Yes.
Smiling,
Yes.
And the caption is like, look at the beautiful flowers here. You know, it's great. And there's a lot of women in the comments saying, yeah, those flowers are great, but the police officers are even more beautiful. So... And I mean, there's a handful of women agreeing to this. So needless to say, Bobby's feeling hot right now. Okay.
Oh
so
my gosh.
If we get a little sass, then you know the backstory, figgies.
Okay. I mean, sass for me is par for the course. So
that's true. Very true. Just, you're feeling good. Feeling good.
A little gracious.
All right. So last week we just opened with chapter one of Dune, and this week we are doing 2, 3, and 4.
Indeed. Absolutely.
Or I guess 2 weeks ago. Yeah, we didn't really mention. I got pretty dang sick last week. So
yeah, we were gonna record last week, but Kelsey was feeling under the weather, so we skipped a week.
It was a rough one. So here we are though. 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah.
Trucking along. I'm getting really into it too.
Yeah, it's starting to make more sense. And I read a little bit of a not a synopsis, but kind of a review of Dune.
Yeah.
And it said that, okay, in the beginning, this book comes at you really hard and fast.
Yes, it's a lot
it
of input.
Throws a lot of stuff at you, but in the end, it all makes sense.
Okay. Well, and here's the thing too, and so this is what I kind of wanted to backtrack a little bit, is that when there's like a little, because different books do this, so in this book, the chapters are not numbered and there's not chapter names. What it has is a little passage at the start of each chapter, and that's pretty much the identifier.
Yeah.
Typically, if that happens, I don't read it. This, it's very necessary to read these.
Yeah, it is.
It tells you exactly what you're going to find out in these chapters. So
yeah. It gives you some details and or a little, at least alludes to what information is going to be covered in the chapters. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, don't sleep on those chapter openers, read them. Don't be like me is really the moral of the story there on that one. Cause you're going to need it.
Yeah.
Okay. So chapter two, let's just start with that opening quote then.
Okay, so in the audiobook, so have you listened to the audiobook for all these chapters?
No, I started in chapter 5. So
oh, so in the audiobook, all of these passages so far have been stated by a female.
Yes.
So I think you should read it.
Oh, I know, but like the pronunciations.
Okay, I'll try.
You got to do it first.
Okay, all right, I'll try. You guys ready?
Yeah.
Here's my best effort. So this is a quote from the beginning of chapter one, correct?
We'll just start with chapter two.
Start with chapter two? Okay, yeah. So I'll do the statement from chapter two. Let me see here. Let me pull it up. So the quote from the beginning of chapter two is, "To attempt an understanding of the Muad'Dib without understanding his mortal enemies, the Harkonnens, is to attempt seeing truth without knowing falsehood. It is the attempt to see the light without knowing darkness. It cannot be." From the manual of Muad'Dib, from the princess Irulan.
Nice.
I think is how it goes.
Just the princess.
The princess from Irulan.
Because at this point, there's no other princess. So to me, she's just
the princess. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, clearly we're meeting the Harkonnens in this chapter, and we're going to hopefully understand a little bit about them.
Yeah, so the Harkonnens, I think we've figured out from the first chapter, are the mortal enemies of the Atreides. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
So, yeah, we meet them in this chapter and we get to know a little bit more about them.
Yeah, yeah. So, kind of very mirroring to chapter one in that we meet pretty much three key players in chapter one. In this chapter, there's also three key players, just kind of, opposite. And I don't know, I'm kind of hesitant to say antagonist, protagonist. I don't know if it's going to be one of those books where kind of nobody's a good person. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, it's hard to know for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I guess protagonist, yeah. I mean, clearly Paul is, right? But I get the vibe that when there's political stuff going on, you know, nobody's a good guy.
Yeah. Yeah. In the first chapter, we're introduced to Paul Atreides and his mother, Jessica, first. Yeah. And we know that he's the son of a duke.
Yes.
So usually when we're introduced to these characters first, they're probably going to be the protagonists. But yeah, we don't know 100% yet.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So first we have Baron Harkonnen, Vladimir Harkonnen, right?
Yeah, Vladimir.
And I mean, to me, it was pretty obvious that he's going to be the antagonist. The narrator did not paint him in a good light in this chapter. You know, just the descriptors and everything. It just, you know, you could tell that it's not a, not going to be a nice person. Or at the very least, he's an enemy of the Atreides, right?
Yeah, for sure. But at the same time, it seems like he has a little bit of sympathy for what's going to happen.
You think so?
To me. I think so. It seems like it. The Atreides are definitely his enemy, but at the same time, he feels some... It seems to me like he feels some sort of regret what's about to occur, but it's happened regardless.
Yeah, okay. That's true. Which,
I mean, you can disagree.
I guess. If you have regret and you choose to do it anyway. Or if...
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, I don't know. I guess that's... That's kind of, it's too deep for right now, I think.
Yeah, it seems, it's just, it's all a power play, it seems like.
Yeah.
So, anyways, what do we find out about Baron Vladimir Harkonnen in this chapter?
He's feuding, you know, and it's been a long-standing feud. This clearly isn't the start of the feud. That at the beginning of this book, this is not the beginning of the feud. It goes way back, okay? And we find out that it's actually the Harkonnens that have been ordered to hand over control of Arrakis to the Atreides. So that's, you know, it's not helping tensions between families at all.
Not at all.
And the emperor kind of delegated this to happen.
Yeah, it's what it seems like, that the Harkonnens are kind of working as agents of the Emperor. Yeah.
And yeah, we'll see. And the whole thing is a little bit muddled because he's mad about it, but also wanted this to happen. But also, I mean, we'll see. There's a lot to be determined in this.
Oh yes, absolutely.
It's a big book. We don't know everything. So
new. Yeah.
And he seems very intelligent. But also the author makes it really known that he's a very large man.
Yeah. Yeah. It talks about how he has like supports for his body that are like hooks in his flesh.
Yeah.
Because he weighs something in the effect of 200 kilograms.
Yeah.
But his feet can only handle 50. So he needs some type of extra help and support.
Yeah.
So, it's a little bit interesting.
Very specific on that end.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Super specific. So the author really, the narrator really needed us to know that information.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah, we need to know he's a large man who has considerable girth, perhaps a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for? He likes to partake of the finer things in life.
Yes, yeah, definitely. Okay, so who's the next person that we meet? So we'll go over the three main players in this chapter and then talk about kind of what goes on.
Yeah, so the other person we meet in this chapter is, so the pronunciation that I gleaned from it is called Piter.
Yeah.
And he is what is called a Mentat, which seems to be some sort of almost like a psychic or a prophet of some sort, mm-hmm. who can kind of foresee future events.
Yeah.
He is capable of very advanced mathematical calculations and predictions of the world without the aid of computers or electronics or whatever. And, but the issue with Piter, according to Duke Harkonnen, he likes to partake in something called the spices.
Yeah.
That the Duke is concerned might be sort of inhibiting his abilities, mm-hmm. and making him less trustworthy.
Yeah.
So we're told pretty openly in this chapter that Duke Vladimir Harkonnen is thinking about eventually getting rid of this guy because he doesn't really feel like he can trust him that much. And because he's a Mentat, Piter kind of gleans this bit of information, knows that it's coming,
mm-hmm.
and seems to be almost a little bit okay with it. And also, I don't know if you felt this way, but as a Mentat, he seems to be like he's under Vladimir Harkonnen in terms of authority.
Yeah.
But he's pretty sassy with him.
They are just spicy with one another. Like,
yes.
Let's be adults here. That's what I wanted to say a couple times, you know, like his poor nephew sitting there and he's the mature one. Like, what is with these two? You know?
Exactly. And like Harkonnen puts Piter in his place a number of times, like kind of like goes at him like, hey, like do your job type of thing.
Yeah.
And Piter does do his job, but at the same time is, man, like he talks to Harkonnen like, I guess the only way I can say it is he's really sassy with him.
Yeah.
Or spicy, like you said. He's
spicy.
Kind of challenging him a little bit and pushing back a little bit. Like, he knows that maybe his time is limited in his role, but at the same time, he kind of doesn't seem to care. He's going to do what he's going to do type of thing.
I mean, he seems incredibly powerful and talented, so maybe he doesn't need to care either.
That's very possible. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
We've met the Duke.
Yeah.
We've met Piter, who is kind of, he's a Mentat who's kind of like his advisor and strategist type of thing. And then, like you mentioned, Harkonnen has a nephew in the room. And who is the nephew?
Fayed Rotha?
Yeah, Fayed Rotha. Yeah.
So he's Baron Harkonnen's nephew. He's about the same age as Paul. So we kind of have that duality going on there. And like we talked about, seems pretty annoyed with the two of them for most of the chapter. Seems a little checked out of the conversation. But my question, he does seem annoyed with them. Does he seem a little bit spoiled to you? A little entitled?
Yeah, it kind of seems like it. I think that the Duke... Yeah, I think that the Duke Harkonnen is... He's wanting to get his nephew involved in what's going on.
Yeah.
And get him up to speed on the plan, which is, of course... I don't know if we've talked about this, but he's... The plan is to assassinate Duke Atreides, Leto Atreides.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the plan, because... Yeah. The Atreides are going to, or their hope is to take over Arrakis.
Yeah.
The planet of Dune. And apparently the Emperor doesn't want this to happen. So he's supporting the Harkonnens in their, like, sort of covertly, I guess, in their endeavor. Is that what you got from it?
I'm still trying to figure it out. You know, I'm trying to figure out the Emperor in all of this.
Yeah, because we have not been introduced to the Emperor yet.
And really, then really just the intentions and how this all works.
Yeah.
Like you just hand over a planet, you know?
Yeah, because there's this, apparently this interplanetary empire that exists that the Emperor is over in charge of. And then the various nobles, I guess is what you'd call them, are kind of going up against each other, trying to garner more power. And the Atreides and the Harkonnens are enemies. They're sort of like generational rivals. They don't really like each other very much. Mm-hmm. And the whole plan is they're going to sort of infiltrate the Atreides' inner circle.
Yeah.
And make it seem like the Atreides are going to win this thing or have some sort of false confidence. And then they're going to swoop in and the Harkonnens are going to swoop in and take this thing over.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're getting from it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's how I'm understanding it. And so the plan, so we find out about this plan, which has kind of been hinted at in chapter one, you know, that there's going to be a downfall. And then now it's only chapter two and we're being told what this plan actually is. So it's an assassination attempt on Paul, but this is just a distraction for what's really going to happen. So they're going to make it seem as though Lady Jessica is the betrayer. But it's actually going to be their doctor that carries out the betrayal.
Yeah, who I think is also a Mentat.
I don't know. I forget.
That's
in two chapters, right?
What's that?
Is that in chapter four?
It might be. Yeah. So this doctor apparently has been trained by the Empire and he has imperial indoctrination or imperial training or something.
Yeah.
And there's supposed to be nothing that can pierce that.
Mm-hmm.
But the Harkonnens, along with their Mentat, Piter, have figured out a way to manipulate this situation to their advantage.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we also find out, and this is interesting, that Baron Harkonnen does have knowledge, some kind of knowledge of the training that Lady Jessica has given to Paul. And kind of the powers that Paul has too. So that's interesting.
It is interesting, yeah. Because Paul, we know, has been trained in the Bene Gesserit way.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I think was definitely a secret.
Yeah, I think it was too. Yeah. As far as the Atreides knew, it was a secret. Yeah.
Yeah. And so the fact that Baron Harkonnen knows this, I think we need to, you know, kind of put a pin in that and remember that for later.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, that pretty much sums up chapter two. We meet them and we find out, you know, kind of the plan to start this book, you know, kind of the big,
right.
The big first action that's going to happen. Do you have anything else on chapter two?
Not that I can think of at this point, no.
Okay. Okay, so chapter three. So we'll start with the opening quote.
Are you going to read this one?
Sure, I'll read this one. Okay, so, thus spoke Saint Alia of the Knife. Alia of the Knife.
Uh-huh.
Okay. The Reverend Mother must combine the seductive wiles of a courtesan with the untouchable majesty of a virgin goddess, holding these attributes in tension so long as the powers of her youth endure. For when youth and beauty have gone, she will find that the place between, once occupied by tension, has become a wellspring of cunning and resourcefulness. So back to the Reverend Mother, pretty much.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Going on back. So we're back to Paul, Lady Jessica, and the Reverend Mother.
Yes.
And she's angry.
Yeah, she's not happy with Jessica.
No, not at all. And why is that?
Well, because Jessica, apparently this is a decision that can be made. I don't know yet. But she's extremely angry that Jessica had a son instead of a daughter as instructed, because apparently there is a choice upon what sex of child you have. I don't really understand it, but
I think maybe this is just a truth of this book that we have to come to terms with at this point.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
So apparently what she's kind of upset with is she wanted Jessica to have a daughter so that a daughter could be wed to a son of the Harkonnens and sort of breach the gap between the two families.
Yeah.
But that's not going to happen since she had a son.
Yeah. So, I mean, bummer.
Yeah, I guess. But apparently, Jessica having a son was important to Duke Leto, who it's Paul's father.
Yeah.
He wanted to have a son. And so she cares so much about that, that she disobeyed the Reverend Mother and the Bene Gesserit.
Yeah, so she was willing to go that far because she cared so deeply for him.
Exactly, yeah.
He still does.
Yeah, and so the Reverend Mother kind of is, in this chapter to me, kind of has a conflict going on within her. She's upset that Jessica has had a son, but she's also potentially optimistic about it. Potentially. She doesn't know for sure.
Yeah.
But what's the reason that she's potentially optimistic about this son of the Duke?
So because of, you know, Paul's abilities, she knows that there is that possibility that he could maybe be the Kwisatz Haderach.
Haderach, yeah.
Haderach. Uh-huh. There we go.
You got it. You nailed it.
Which we're still learning about, you know, but seems really important.
Yeah, apparently this person whoever's going to be the Kwisatz Haderach has some very special abilities that can breach, or not breach, but bridge something. We don't know 100%, but can bridge and mend some issues that are going on in the world.
Yeah, yes. So, I mean, the Reverend Mother doesn't waste her time. She talks all about the danger in this choice to have a son to Lady Jessica. And I mean, she even becomes emotional by it, which to me, and I don't know, did you feel this way? That seemed to me kind of uncharacteristic. And we don't know her that well, but it kind of seemed uncharacteristic of the Reverend Mother.
Yeah, because the Reverend Mother kind of seems like she's very matter of fact and almost harsh in the way she views things. But it does describe in this chapter, I think at least once, maybe twice, that there were tears that started to stream down her face.
Yes.
About the potential of what Paul could be.
Yeah, yes. And then Lady Jessica also becomes emotional because she does realize this danger. But she also accepts the fate for herself, not only herself, but for Paul as well, that the position that they're in. And so kind of at that point in their little conversation, things die down. It's not as heated between the two of them. And Paul is summoned in to speak with them.
Yes.
And he gets questioned about his dreams. So we talked about his dreams before in the first chapter and how they're kind of prophetic in nature. And so he's questioned about these. And so he talks about his dream where there was a girl, and in that dream, he told this girl all about what happened with the Reverend Mother during the test that he endured.
Yeah, and this dream, this is how I looked at it or heard it or saw it. This dream that Paul had that he describes to the Reverend Mother occurred prior to the trial that he went through.
Yes.
So like you said, it is prophetic.
Yeah, yeah. And he, and am I remember this correctly, that he said something like he hasn't met this girl, but he knows that he will, or something like that?
Yeah, he knows that he will meet her. He describes her as being thin and having eyes, I think, that are all blue with no white. He gets pretty specific in her description.
Mm-hmm.
And the Reverend Mother asks something like, do you often have dreams that ultimately come true in life? And he says something like, yeah, most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not all the time, but most of the time, the dreams that I dream eventually come true in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, yeah. So then she tells Paul of that possibility of who Paul or what Paul may grow to be, and how important that is. And she also kind of gives some insight into, she knows what's going to happen to Duke Leto as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, she seems well aware of the fate of at least Duke Leto and what's going to happen. And it makes me wonder who else is aware and if we're all just trucking along because this has to happen in this way. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe it's just the Bene Gesserit who kind of know that Duke Leto is on his way to a demise.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they don't share it with anybody else. I don't know for sure. I do know at one point she says that she can kind of imply or hint about things that are going to happen. And Paul kind of takes offense to that. Like, she doesn't really know.
Yeah.
She's just making statements and giving general advice about things. And he seems kind of irritated with that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if what that means or why he is irritated.
Teenager, you know.
Well, yeah, he's a teenager. I guess maybe that's the case. But
a constant state of irritation.
I guess, yeah. So, like, he seems to be simultaneously intrigued.
Yeah.
About the Reverend Mother, but also at the same time annoyed that she's not being more specific, that she's being more general about things. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how you feel about it, but.
No, I agree. And so then before this chapter closes, we see the Reverend Mother kind of urging Lady Jessica to continue her training with Paul in the voice, because if she does that, there may be hope. So,
yeah, there's something about Paul that seems to intrigue the Reverend Mother. Like, you know what? This may be our best shot yet, that this is the Kwisatz Haderach.
Yeah.
But she's still not 100% convinced, I guess. Yeah, I don't know.
Which ends the chapter kind of, not negatively, but kind of down, you know?
A little bit on a downer note, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so now chapter 4. All right, so do you want to read this one?
Sure, I can read this one. So the introductory quote we get for this portion of the book, and this is all read to this point by the princess that we talked about. We don't know who she is, but the princess is the one doing all these quotes. And she says, "You have read that the Muad'Dib had no playmates his own age on Caladan. The dangers were too great, but Muad'Dib did have wonderful companion teachers. There was Gurney Halleck, the troubadour warrior. You will sing some of Gurney's songs as you read along in this book. There was Thufir Hawat, the old Mintat master of assassins, who struck fear even into the heart of the Padishah Emperor. There was Duncan Idaho, the sword master of Ganaz, Dr. Wellington Yua, a name black in treachery but bright in knowledge. The Lady Jessica, who guided her son in the Bene Gesserit way. And, of course, the Duke Leto, whose qualities as a father have long been overlooked.
All right. So, I mean, really the main people in Paul's life, because clearly he has no friends.
That's what it seems like. He doesn't really have any friends his own age. They're all like parents / teachers. Mentors / teachers. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, okay. Thanks for that, you know?
Yeah. So we're introduced.
Dangerous too, I guess.
Yeah, it's very possible.
It's really dangerous. So.
Yeah. So we're first introduced in this chapter to the character that's mentioned in this quote, Thufir Hawat.
Mm-hmm.
And what do we learn about him?
So he doesn't really, I mean, he and Paul seem very close. They seem like they are close. They're pretty open with each other. But we know from the narrator that he does not really approve of Lady Jessica's training of Paul. Seems like he's pretty opposed to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, through his conversation with Paul, we also learn a lot more of Arrakis.
Yes.
So pretty much this planet, you know, they're kind of talking because the move is coming quickly. And in fact, I'm pretty sure he leaves the next day.
Yes.
And so they're just talking about it. Paul wants to know more about it so that he knows what to be prepared for. So really, it's a desert wasteland and it has terrible storms. It doesn't seem like a pleasant place.
No.
And water is very, very precious there.
Yeah, apparently has very small polar ice caps.
Yeah. And so,
water is very scarce.
Yeah, there's really not a lot of water, so much so that the people there, the Fremen, wear suits that recycles their own body's water so that they could use it again. Which is
so basically they harvest sweat.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, seems like
it's a little gross.
A tough place to live. That's for sure.
Yeah. It does not seem fun.
Yeah. And so overall, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, which makes it very interesting because it seems like Arrakis is a very sought after planet to control.
Yeah. It must
by the Atreides and the Harkonnens.
It must be because of control of spice.
Maybe, because there's also mention of, oh my gosh, I can't think of the company. They almost seem like they're the East India Trading Company of this world. Yes, the Chome. Thank you.
Yeah.
They're a very influential group in all of this.
Yeah.
And they kind of control a lot of trade and that type of thing. Maybe the spice trade. And if you're in with them or have access to the type of materials or goods that they're looking for, that it's financially... It does mention this in chapter 2 when Duke Harkonnen is talking to his nephew and Piter about things that at one point his nephew said is it kind of like thinks to himself, okay, so it's all about wealth.
Yeah.
Like it's all about money type of thing. And so I guess, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe that's why Arrakis is so sought after, even though it's so inhospitable.
Yeah. So I guess it seems.
I mean, I guess we're going to find out more, but this is speculation at this point.
Yeah, we'll find out more. So, I mean, overall, you know, I feel as though the author does a really good job of evoking feelings in each chapter of what you're supposed to be feeling about each conversation or each person just by the underlying conversation or the descriptions of things. And for this one, you know, there's that feeling of uncertainty, maybe even fear about moving to Arrakis.
Yeah, for sure. I think you're right.
And Hawa, right?
Yes.
Makes it almost feel as though it's just impending doom. Like it's just
He does not seem excited about this prospect at all. Yeah.
no, not in the slightest. And so that's kind of their conversation. They just kind of speak pretty much about Arrakis and what's there and mostly what's not there. And then he leaves and Halleck comes in.
Yeah, Gurney Halleck,
Yeah, and so what happens between him and Paul?
So Gurney Halleck comes in, and yeah, you definitely get the impression that he and Paul have some sort of relationship. Like they're Paul kind of considers them to be friends of some sort. But he's also sort of a tutor or teacher to Paul. And it seems like maybe in the past, so what Halleck does, Gurney Halleck does in this chapter, is there's a fighting lesson basically between he and Paul. And it seems like maybe in the past they've had these types of lessons before, and it's been a little bit more jovial, a little bit more lighthearted. But this time, Halleck is more intense. Like he comes at Paul pretty hard. Their weapons that they are using are basically, I don't know if enchanted is the right word because it doesn't seem like there's magic as much so far, in this book as much as science, some form of science. So the weapons are, geared or manufactured in a way to where they won't do actual physical harm, but you can still kind of feel it a little bit, like maybe feel a little bit of pain or discomfort when something happens. And so,
Like he gets scratches and things like that.
yeah, but no mortal wounds. So Halleck comes at Paul pretty hard in this sparring session. And Paul notices a difference, basically, and is kind of like, I mean, I guess for lack of a better way to say it, is kind of like, what the heck? Like, what's going on? And Halleck is basically kind of telling him, there's not going to be any mercy if you deal with the Harkonnens. So this is me teaching you what to expect in battle without actually killing you. And Paul acquits himself pretty well. Like he actually does a decent job, apparently. And Halleck acknowledges that. He's actually a little bit surprised that Paul does so well, but he also feels sorry for him, it seems like, because so much of a burden is being thrust upon Paul at such an early age to have to deal with this kind of thing. And I think I remember at one point Paul remarks that, man, if you actually hurt me, my uncle the Duke would, my father the Duke, sorry, would be pretty upset. And Halleck says, the Duke would only be upset if I didn't train you in the way you should be trained to survive what's to come. And he's doing it so that Paul, I think, understands the gravity and the importance of what is to come and how dangerous this eventual supposed takeover of Arrakis is going to be.
Because when you hear at first that the Atreides are gaining control of Arrakis, it's like, oh, okay, you feel as though when you hear this at first, oh, they have the upper hand. But the more you're reading, the more it's like, oh, I don't really think this is a good thing at all for anybody involved.
Yeah. It kind of goes back to what you mentioned a little bit about the Reverend Mother, because the Reverend Mother was basically talking like this is going to be really bad for the Duke. Like she knows. And you made the comment, do more people know about this, or is it just the Reverend Mother? Maybe you're right. Maybe everybody involved is kind of like, this is not going to be pretty. This is
And
going to
they
be
just
ugly.
like don't have a choice, I guess. I don't know.
I guess, yeah, like this is going to be ugly. People are going to die. And you, Paul, must be prepared for what's going to happen.
It's really crunch time here.
That's what it seems like. It seems like things are getting really intense really fast.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, that's where we leave off.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, like you, it's getting intense really fast. So,
yeah, I mean, I'm expecting because what's his name? Hawat?
Yeah, he moves tomorrow.
He's going tomorrow. So things are happening pretty quick. Like this isn't happening months or years from now. It's happening right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I'm curious to see what's going to come in the succeeding chapters, how quickly this is going to go. If it's like the Atreides are going to Arrakis and here's conflict, like right from the get-go. Yeah. Are we going to get into the action really fast? Yeah, it kind of seems like
quick is this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we'll see. We will see.
Indeed.
All right. Well, that wraps up chapters 2, 3, and 4. And next time we will cover 5, 6, and 7.
Okay.
All right. Sound good?
Sounds great.
Sounds great. All right. Well, let us know what you guys think if you're reading along with us. You know, this is first time for us. So if this is the first time for you, let us know what you think. If it's not the first time, let us know what you think too, you know, and just.
Yeah. If you guys are big Dune fans, because we know they're out there. This is a very popular book. Let us know if we're not picking up on things that we should be picking up on.
Yeah, like, hello.
If, try not to do spoiler alerts quite yet for people who haven't read the book yet, like Kelsey and I. But, you know, let us know if there's themes that we should be already picking up on that we're just not, we're just not getting it for some reason. You know what I mean?
Yeah. All right. Well, continue the journey on social media. You can find us on Instagram at The Fig Pod. Email us at thefigpod@gmail.com. And you can find us on Patreon. Patreon at patreon.com/thefigpod.
And please do not forget to rate, review, and subscribe so that you never miss another episode of the Fantasy in General podcast.
See you next week.
See you next week.